the not all who wander are lost. I see that all over Facebook. I don't know. This is totally unrelated to Strider and Aragorn, but I feel like that actually is a misappropriated quote. Because I feel like when I see those pictures on Facebook and everything, it's like, you guys are probably just wandering, just aimlessly.
So to describe what you're talking about, I just did a quick Google search of not all those who wander are lost. And first item that comes up is All That Is Gold, J.R.R. Tolkien life quote, inspirational poem, minimalist poster on Etsy that has the poem that we just read in a typewritten font in a nice black frame.
Clifford, we're back again on this doubleheader.
Yes, we are.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome to Chapter 10 of The Fellowship of the Ring, Strider.
All right, so big dialogue-heavy chapter here. So we have to talk about the title character, Strider.
Mm-hmm.
We have to talk about, like, choosing whether or not to trust him. You know, there's kind of a disagreement between the hobbits.
Right.
Maybe we'll talk about Butterburn if we... Maybe. Or Butterbur, if... Maybe. We'll see. And then we got to talk about the Black Rider incident that happened within this chapter, too.
Yes, indeed.
But before that, we got to do Cliff's notes. But since this chapter is, like, literally all dialogue, usually we've kind of, like, given that, like, a pretty good treatment, whether it's, like, Frodo and Gandalf or Frodo and Gildor and everything. So, like, there's enough, like, good lines in here that we kind of just thought, like... Maybe we should do, like, a free flow and jazz Cliff's Notes where we'll both kind of contribute and just, like, kind of roll through, like, all the essentials of the chapter, and then we can wrap up talking about all, like, the little topics like Strider and choosing whether to trust him or not and the Black Riders and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think we should dive into it, though.
Okay.
All right, Clifford, do you want to start us off?
Yeah. So, if you remember at the end of the last chapter... They're sitting around the common room of the inn as just about everyone filters out besides the hobbits and Strider and Butterbur. Merry, if we remember, is absent. We don't really know where he is. So they all head back to their parlor. Strider sneakily comes along with them. Strider tells Frodo that he'll offer them good advice, but for a price. And what will that be, pray? Said Frodo. He suspected now that he had fallen in with a rascal, and he thought uncomfortably that he had brought only a little money with him. All of it would hardly satisfy a rogue, and he couldn't spare any of it.
He sounds like such an old person there.
Yeah, it's pretty stingy. Stingy and practical.
Like, that's like 1940s talk, if I've ever heard it.
Yeah, like, this guy's gonna stick me up, and I don't have much to offer.
Yeah. Well, Strider goes on, he says, no more than you can afford, answered Strider with a slow smile, as if he guessed Frodo's thoughts. Just this. You must take me along with you until I wish to leave you. This dude's pretty direct. Pretty direct.
Frodo responds, I've got to know more about you before I even, you know, start to think about it.
Right. And so Strider's like, well, that's pretty excellent because you're coming back to your senses as opposed to, like, when you're in the common room. I mean, that was ridiculous. But here's what I know. By the end, you might want to take me along with you.
Well, so what do you actually know?
Too much. Too many dark things, says Strider grimly. But as for your business, this is like the most aloof loner answer.
I know. It goes on with this sort of like, he's like the Clint Eastwood cowboy character in the Western Saloon.
But slightly sappier.
Right. I mean, yeah, a little over the top.
Anyways, he says it. Well, Strider says he was sitting on the road to Bree, and he was talking to old Bombadil, and he saw them talking to old Bombadil, which, you know, to Strider, it's just old Bombadil. It's not like that guy's a revelation. It's kind of weird. But Frodo Baggins is going to go by Underhill instead, and then he slips over the gate behind him. So that was who that shadow was in the last chapter.
Frodo wants to know, why are you spying on me?
And so Strider tells him, he says, I'm looking for Frodo Baggins. I had heard he left the Shire. Don't worry, I'll keep the secret better than you have. But the Black Riders are about. You got to beware.
Frodo responds, you know, I should have known that they were around. Why did we act so stupidly all night when we were hanging out with everyone?
Right, and so Strider's just going about it. He's just like, yeah, it'd have been better if you stayed here. I tried to warn Butterbur, but he wouldn't let me in to see you, because I seem pretty shady. But your prank...
Frodo, you know, it was an accident.
Yeah, well, the accident has really cost you.
Frodo insists it's no worse than it was. It seems like the horsemen have missed me. For now.
But then Strider responds, he says, don't count on that, buddy. They'll come back. I know their number. Which is also like, the way he phrases this stuff is just so weird. Mm-hmm. He talks differently than other people. Like, yeah. But we can mention that after we finish this. They're shady dudes like Bill Ferney who will sell you out. You don't want their story going out to the wrong people. Strider says, it seems to me only too likely that they will hear of it before the night is over. Is that enough? You can do as you like with my reward. Take me as your guide or not. But I may say that I know all the lands between the Shire and the Misty Mountains, for I have wandered over them for many years. I am older than I look. I might prove useful. Will you have me to leave the open road after tonight? For the horsemen will watch it night and day. You may escape from Bree, and you may be allowed to go forward while the sun is up, but you won't go far. They will come on you in the wild, in the dark place where there is no help. Or do you wish them to find you? They are terrible. That sounds a lot like what Gildor was saying. Like, they are terrible.
Frodo's got nothing to say to this.
Right. So, yeah, silence again. And so Strider goes on and he's like, okay, clearly you guys don't know how bad these riders actually are because you don't fear them nearly enough. And then he says, Strider can take you by paths that are seldom trodden. Will you have him? Which, you know, he's referring to himself in third person. Last time he saw that was with Bard. just noteworthy.
Bombadil also refers to himself in the third person.
Oh, that's true. You're right, Cooper. My bad. Okay. Silence ensues again.
Sam chimes in, no. He's advising us not to trust anyone. Let's start with him.
Right, and so Frodo thinks that's kind of a good idea. What does Frodo say?
Well, I think you look shady by choice, and you certainly aren't like the Bree folk. But Sam is right. Why tell us to take care and then still trust you? How do you know what's going on with me?
And so then Strider goes on and he's just like, all right, well, good. You guys are finally learning some caution. But here's the deal. I'm your only chance to make it to Rivendell.
And as he's about to jump into his backstory, Butterbur bursts in.
And then Strider hides in the corner for that. Butterbur, what? He's coming to say goodnight to them?
Mm-hmm.
And he says he was told by what? Or he says what?
He was told by Gandalf to look out for Shire hobbits, especially one named Baggins, going by the name Underhill.
And so Butterburn had said 3 months ago, so I guess what? We're at like the end of September here, so that would have been in June. Gandalf had come in and asked Butterbur to post a letter to the Shire and to be delivered to Mr. Frodo Baggins, which at that point...
Frodo exclaims, you know, giving himself away instantly, but keeps rolling with it. Demands to know why the letter wasn't mailed 3 months ago.
And so Butterburn then, you know, like, and that's what I said, you know, last chapter. It's like, you know, just turn it on these people, like, demanding, like, being aggressive with them. It's working, you know? Because Butterburn, he's like, well, I'm sorry. It was hard to find a messenger. You know, I was really busy. You know, one thing drives out another, which we can all relate to that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But then he has a quote here. He says, I'll do what I can to set matters right. And if there's any help I can give, you'll only have to name it. Which, I've kind of found that an admirable apology myself.
Yeah, and that's the best you could hope for, I think, from this innkeeper.
Yeah, Butterbur goes on here, too. He says, Gandalf said, if you come here without him, you're probably in trouble. And the Black Riders have been here asking around for Baggins. And that Strider, he tried to get in here to see you tonight. And then Strider all of a sudden reveals himself and he's like, he did. He succeeded. And it would have been better if he had gotten here sooner.
Butterbur jumps naturally. Yeah. The weird guy in the corner.
Right. But Frodo is cool. Frodo says it's cool that he's here. You know, he was invited, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Butterbeer's like, well, it's your business, but I wouldn't take up with a ranger. And then all of a sudden, Strider's got this quote, which is pretty poignant. He was just, then who would you take up with? A fat innkeeper who only remembers his own name because people shouted at him all day? They cannot stay at the pony forever, and they cannot go home. They have a long road before them. Will you keep them and keep them safe from the black men? Which, I don't know, that was quite the insult. And Butterbeer kind of goes on. He's like, well, I'd never leave Bree, but why can't you just stay here nice and quiet for a while until these black riders go away? I mean, where are these black riders even coming from?
So Frodo starts mumbling about how he's tired and fearful, and then he's cut off.
Right, because all of a sudden, you know, Strider goes back into that. They come from Mordor. From Mordor, Barleyman, if that's anything to you. And all of a sudden, Butterbeer's just like, oh, save us. Like, that's the worst news in my lifetime.
Frodo inquires, are you still willing to help us?
And Butterbeer, again, another admirable response. He says, I am, more so now than ever. But I'm not sure, you know, how much use I'm going to be. And Strider just said, against the shadow in the east, not much, Barleyman, but every little bit helps. And Butterbeer says, it's too bad about the incident. You know, everybody's going to put two and two together. We had heard about Bilbo, so, like, this isn't going to go well. You know, like, the news of this is spreading quick.
So Butterbeer walks out and says, you know, I'll put up guards at all the doors. And everyone, meanwhile, is starting to wonder where Merry is.
Right, because he's still been absent this whole time, yeah.
Right, because he said he was going to sit out the karaoke night at the bar and stay in the room and then go out for some fresh air a little bit later on. So Butterbeer sends out his server to look for him.
While the server's gone, Strider comes and he's just like, well, Strider's talking to Frodo and he's just like, so when are you going to open that letter from Gandalf? Do you want to read that letter, Clifford?
Inside, written in the wizard's strong but graceful script, was the following message. The Prancing Pony, Bree, Midyear's Day, Shire Year, 1418. Dear Frodo, bad news has reached me here. I must go off at once. You had better leave Bag End soon and get out of the Shire before the end of July at the latest. I will return as soon as I can, and I will follow you if I find that you are gone. Leave a message for me here if you pass through Bree. You can trust the landlord, Butterbeer. You may meet a friend of mine on the road, a man, lean, dark, tall, by some called Strider. He knows our business and will help you. Make for Rivendell. There I hope we may meet again. If I do not come, Elrond will advise you. Yours in haste, Gandalf. P.S. Do not use it again. Not for any reason whatever. Do not travel by night. P.P.S. Make sure that it is the real Strider. There are many strange men on the roads. His true name is Aragorn. All that is gold does not glitter. Not all those who wander are lost. The old that is strong does not wither. Deep roots are not reached by the frost. From the ashes a fire shall be woken, a light from the shadows shall spring. Renewed shall be the blade that was broken, the crownless again shall be king.
Oh.
P.P.S. I hope Butterbeer sends this promptly. A worthy man, but his memory is like a lumber room. Things wanted always buried. If he forgets, I shall roast him. Farewell.
Dude, if Gandalf ever gets back, Butterbeer's in trouble. Oh, man.
Certainly.
Yeah, he effed up.
Yes, because, as you mentioned, we're into, what, September now? End of September?
Right, end of September, yeah.
And Gandalf here was like, you've got to get out of the Shire by July at the latest.
Yeah.
So, presumably, Gandalf saw that bad things were going to be happening. And I think the implication would be Gandalf thought that Frodo and everyone being on the road while there are black riders about is a terribly dangerous situation.
Yeah.
And now that's where we are.
All right. Noteworthy, though. I think it's kind of refreshing to just have contact from Gandalf, even though this letter is 3 months old.
Totally. I'm sure they're very reassured because they've been, since the beginning of the book, when Gandalf departed and he said, I'll be back, Frodo and the rest of the hobbits have been waiting on Gandalf. They don't know where he is, what he's up to. Is something wrong? Are they doing the right thing? Et cetera, et cetera. You know, on the one hand, you'd say, can't they be a little bit independent? And do they really need Gandalf to kind of hold their hand through everything? On the other hand, he's like their spiritual guide and is the one who basically talked Frodo and the rest of them up for this quest. So without Gandalf around to to say what the situation is or what, you know, what needs to happen next, they are a little bit lost.
Right. Well, I mean, Frodo's wondering, like, what's going on with Gandalf, right?
Right. Right. And gets, well, we don't know what he gets from this.
Well, Frodo says what? Frodo says what?
Oh, sorry, gotta jump back to that. Yeah. Where's Gandalf? You know, it sounds like he's going into danger.
Right, and so Strider goes on and he says, like, well, he's been doing that for a long time.
Frodo wonders, you know, why didn't you say you're friends with Gandalf just to save time?
You know, he comes back and he's just like, well, would it? I mean, I had to try to persuade you without any sort of proof. You know, I didn't know about this letter. I also had to figure out to make sure that you were really you. Because the enemy has set traps for me before this point. But I also wanted to see if you'd accept me for my own sake. A hunted man sometimes wearies of distress and longs for friendship. but he admits that his looks are kind of against him on that count.
It's a very personal revelation from Strider. Like, hey, you know, I am looking for a friend here.
Yeah, we'll come back to that. I want to address that once we finish blowing through this chapter.
Pippin, you know, chimes in. At first, yeah, but, you know, probably we're going to look like you too pretty soon.
And then Strider comes back at him. He's just like, you would die before you look like Strider. Unless you're sterner than you look, but probably not.
Sam is still suspicious about this guy. How do we know you're the real Strider? You didn't mention Gandalf until this letter. You could have killed the real Strider.
Sam, you know, Sam's bringing up good points here. But right. Strider, there's the quote here. He says, that you are a stout fellow. So Strider also thinks he's bringing up good points. But I'm afraid my only answer to you, Sam Gamgee, is this. If I had killed the real Strider, I could kill you. And I should now have killed you already without so much talk. If I was after the ring, I could have it now. He stood up and seemed suddenly to grow taller. In his eyes gleamed a light, keen and commanding. Throwing back his cloak, he laid his hand on the hilt of a sword that had hung concealed by his side. He did not dare to move. Sam sat wide-mouthed, staring at him dumbly. But I am the real Strider, fortunately, he said, looking down at them with his face softened by a sudden smile. I am Aragorn, son of Arathorn, and if by life or death I can save you, I will.
The hobbits are in silence with that fairly epic introduction, and eventually Frodo pipes up. I believed that you were a friend before the letter came, or at least I wished to. You have frightened me several times tonight, but never in the way that the servants of the enemy would, or so I imagine. I think one of his spies would, well, seem fairer and feel fouler, if you understand.
And Strider, you know, kind of comes back at him. He's just saying, like, all that is gold does not glitter. Not all those who wander are lost. And, you know, he hadn't read the letter, but then they kind of
right, this confirms the poem from that Gandalf added at the end of his letter is in reference to Strider.
Right. And so then Aragorn actually pulls out the sword that he was putting his hand on the hilt of, and it turns out it's a broken sword. Probably more about that in the future at some point. But Strider goes on to say, too, you know, about this broken sword. He's just like, not much use, is it, Sam? But the time is near when it shall be forged anew. And then Strider goes on, and he says, all right, so, you know, with all that wrapped up, with Sam's permission, I shall lead you tomorrow out by back roads of Bree. We'll make for Weathertop, which is a hill north of the road, halfway to Rivendell. It's got a good view to look around. Gandalf will try to go there too. That's like a good rallying point, you know. After that, the journey becomes really dangerous.
Frodo wonders, though, when did you last see Gandalf? Do you know where he is?
Which Strider, he's actually kind of distressed about this because he says, I don't know. I came west with him in the spring. I usually, you know, watch over the Shire for the last few years. When he was busy, you know, when Gandalf was busy elsewhere, he seldom left it unguarded. Last time I saw him was in May, and he said you'd be setting out the last week of September. This is the first time I've been worried about him ever, like ever. When I returned from the journey, I heard he was missing, and the horsemen were about. Gildor had told me that, and so I was anxiously watching the East Road for you, you know, to try to catch and intercept you guys.
Sounds here like Strider and Gandalf are kind of like the guardian angels of the Shire. Like, they've been in the background, defending the borders all along without anyone knowing.
Right, agreed. We'll address that, too, in a bit.
So, Frodo wants to know, do these Black Riders have to do with Gandalf's absence?
And then Strider's got the quote here. He says, I do not know anything else that could have hindered him, except the enemy himself. But do not give up hope. Gandalf is greater than the Shire folk know. As a rule, you can only see his jokes and his toys. But this business of ours will be his greatest task.
Merry bursts in all of a sudden, at long last. He saw the Black Riders in the village.
Oh no.
Merry says, I went out for a stroll. I had come back again and was standing just outside the light of the lamp looking at the stars. Suddenly I shivered and felt that something horrible was creeping near. There was a sort of deeper shade among the shadows across the road, just beyond the edge of the lamplight. It slid away at once into the dark without a sound. There was no horse. Merry felt drawn to the rider. Then he heard men whispering, and then turned home. But something came from behind, and he fell over. Nob, this is the server, Butterbur's server, who went out to look for Merrow.
Right,
Merry,
right.
Pardon me. Says that it looked like two men were crouching over Merry's body. Merry said, quote, I thought I had fallen into deep water. So he didn't know what happened to him.
And Strider said, I do. The black breath. The riders must have left the horses outside and passed through the south gate in secret. They will know all the news now, for they have visited Bill Ferney, and probably that southerner was a spy as well. Something may happen tonight before we even leave Bree.
Merry inquires, will they attack the inn?
And so then Strider also has the poignant line here. He says, no, I think not. They are not all here yet. And in any case, that is not their way. In dark and loneliness, they are strongest. They will not openly attack a house where there are lights and many people. Not until they are desperate. Not while all the long leagues of Eriador still lie before us. But their power is in terror, and already some in Bree are in their clutch. They will drive these wretches to some evil work, Ferney and some of the strangers.
So Frodo says, sounds like there's enemies all around. What are we to do?
Yeah, and Strider tells him, he's like, all right, we're going to stay here. You're not going to go to your rooms tonight.
Frodo, in the meantime, fills in Merry about everything.
So that Nob guy, he actually, like, fills and, like, makes them look like they're sleeping in the beds in their rooms with, like, some fake kit, you know? Like, they do in the movie. Like, the movie pulls it off perfectly, but it's like that that happened, you know? It was just a sentence in the book, but it happened.
So they bar up the room. It's a clear, starry night, and Strider makes a fire. There's no other light.
And then it ends with Merry chuckling at Frodo's song. That was from the last chapter. Also, kind of crazy to think that just this morning they had woken up in the burrow with Bombadil. Isn't that crazy?
This is
a long day.
It definitely is. This is a 2 or 3 chapter long day.
Right. All right. I think that was all right. A little long, but I think we kind of pulled it off a little bit, Clifford. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do you think?
I like that. We ought to do more of that.
Well, yeah. Maybe. That was, I mean, I'm going to have a lot of editing to do on that.
This is an aside. Maybe we should pull out more word for word quotes, but overall less.
Yeah.
So, what do you think about this Strider guy?
No. What do you think about him? You tell me first.
I think he sounds pretty awesome. I mean, like I said, he strikes me as the Clint Eastwood cowboy hanging out in a bar with a hood over his face. And he's a little bit corny, a little bit over the top with this, man of mystery thing. But he sounds pretty impressive. The type of guy you want on your side.
I think... All right, yeah. I think that's a pretty fair description. I mean, you know, just qualities about him. He's very direct. He's grim, you know, and that grim is almost like sappy corny, as you were mentioning. And he definitely seems like kind of not quite beaten down, but he's worn down, like he's tired, you know. But most admirably of all, in my opinion, is he seems very honest.
Yes. So I'll interject right here because we heard Strider, after he gave his very formal introduction, standing up and pulling back his cloak, revealing his sword, and then he eventually says, all that is gold does not glitter, which is a direct reference to this basically poem that Gandalf added in his PPS to the letter to Frodo, which Strider didn't read. So that, and a little bit later on, let's see, did the verses apply to you then? Asked Frodo. I could not make out what they were about. But how did you know that they were in Gandalf's letter if you had never even seen it? Aragorn replies, I did not know, he answered, but I am Aragorn, and those verses go with that name. As though when Gandalf wrote in his PPS, "Make sure that it is the real Strider. There are many strange men on the roads. His true name is Aragorn." And immediately, all that is glittered, all that is gold does not glitter, etc. All the way down to the crownless again shall be king. It almost suggests that that's like the, his formal title is like includes that poem or something, which I thought is kind of a cool concept that like you would be introduced with like a full poem after your name. But in this description of Strider, I thought it would like maybe we could dive into that poem a little bit more because it would suggest that that describes Strider's qualities or his character a little bit more.
I really like the poem myself.
We'll break it down one more time. All that is gold does not glitter. Not all those who wander are lost. The old that is strong does not wither. Deep roots are not reached by frost. And then we'll talk about that and then do the second half. So we heard the glitter, the gold and the glitter. That sounds like, you know, Strider looks pretty rough and ugly at this point from being on the road. But, you know, he might still be really valuable, basically. And not all those who wander are lost.
The not all who wander are lost. I see that all over Facebook.
Like, for Lord just of the like, Rings.
No, not just Lord of the Rings. Like anything.
Okay.
I see that quote all over. And it's like, ugh. The stereotypical, like, you're wandering through a forest, kind of like, you know, heavily edited pic and everything, uh-huh. You know, and it's like super fancy. And it's just so like,
do we attribute this quote to Tolkien?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, that's what, like, all those pictures, they'll say J.R.R. Tolkien on it, but it's just like, I don't know, this is totally unrelated to Strider and Aragorn, but I feel like that actually is a misappropriated quote. Because I feel like when I see those pictures on Facebook and everything, it's like, you guys are probably just wandering, just aimlessly. I'll go that far.
So to describe what you're talking about, I just did a quick Google search of not all those who wander are lost, and first item that comes up is all that is gold. J.R.R. Tolkien life quote inspirational poem minimalist poster on Etsy that has the poem that we just read. In a typewritten font, yeah. In a nice black frame.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's about what you're describing is your frustration that people pull this too often.
Right. Good quote. Totally misappropriated.
Okay. Well, I part of your frustration might be that it's being used in a very vague way, but in this instance, we're saying it's actually. It sounds like it's a very, very specific series of references to Strider himself.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, we kind of picked it up through that conversation. It's like, okay, Strider, it's like, yeah, this guy's like roaming around Eriador, which is like this kind of this land, you know, right? From basically from the Shire to the Misty Mountains, that's Eriador. And he's roaming all around there. But it's like, yes, this guy has a purpose, right? You know, like that, yes. That comes across in this chapter. You know,
he is wandering,
right?
But he's not lost,
right? Versus like the people in, you know, when they post like the Facebook picture of them, like their day out to the woods.
No self-discovery for Aragorn,
right? And the
old that is strong does not wither. So go ahead.
That was interesting too, because he literally says he's older than he looks. You know, so like the touch of gray, it's like. That's real. That's not, you know, it's not like he's using some sort of product.
Right. We have the implication that he is somewhere between a little old and very old. We don't really know what his age is, but this would suggest that he's still strong.
Right.
And then we've got deep roots are not reached by the frost. So this one, a little bit harder to make out. Maybe we'll have to come back to this later on in the story, but something about roots, origins. I would be intrigued if we could read something about his family tree or his background into this.
Read the rest of the poem too, because okay. Yeah, I feel like a lot of this is maybe foreshadowing.
Okay, so the second half
we're gonna have to wait on it.
From the ashes, a fire shall be woken. A light from the shadows shall spring. Renewed shall be blade that was broken. The crownless again shall be king. So one thing right there, second to last line, renewed shall be blade that was broken. Aragorn, when he pulls out that sword to, you know, after he kind of gave his his flex on the hobbits. He pulls out the sword afterwards and was like, haha, gotcha. It's broken a foot from the hilt. So it would seem that maybe that's this blade that was broken in the poem.
I think that's a good observation, Clifford. Hey, all right, so I feel like the rest of the poem, though, honestly, is just foreshadowing.
Well, so without giving anything away, I think we can stay tuned for learning more about what these deep roots are, what is the fire in the ashes and the light in the shadows being referenced, and who the crownless and the king will be or would be,
right?
Could be,
right? So let's go back to that scene though too, because I actually, like, from what I was reading, I might have interpreted it wrong as I was reading it. That scene where he reveals, like, you know, Sam was asking him, it's like, well, how do we know you're the real Strider? Do you want to read that quote again?
That you are a stout fellow, but I'm afraid my only answer to you, Sam Gamgee, is this. If I had killed the real Strider, I could kill you, and I should have killed you already without so much talk. If I was after the ring, I could have it now. He stood up and seemed to suddenly grow taller, and his eyes gleamed a light, keen and commanding. Throwing back his cloak, he laid his hand on the hilt of the sword that had hung concealed by his side. They did not dare to move. Sam sat wide-mouthed, staring at him dumbly. But I am the real Strider, fortunately, he said, looking down at them with his face softened by a sudden smile. I am Aragorn, son of Arathorn, and if by life or death I can save you, I will.
So how did you interpret this? Did you think, like, when he was saying the first part of the quote, and then, like, it says he, like, stood up and he grew taller, like, that part, did you find that, like, intimidating, or did you find that, like, this sounds like a really noble chap, if you will? Like, this guy seems like a noble...
Actually, that's a good point. Good guy when here. I first read this, I thought it was, like, threatening, like...
Right, that's what I thought, too, yeah.
Right, like, I, you know, if you doubt me, I'm the one here that's tall and has a sword, so back off. But you can relax, because I'm here to help.
Right.
But yeah, I guess you could easily read it as saying, you may distrust me, but let me kind of rise up in my full glory so that I can sort of take a knee and swear my my allegiance to you in a way. Obviously, he's not right. really doing that, but I guess you could read it in that type of way as well.
Okay, maybe so it's both. Right. I don't know if it can. Maybe it's both, but I don't know how it. I don't know. I can't really envision how it can be based on what I know about Strider in the future since I've already read this book. Mm-hmm. Sorry. But I mean, it's like these kinds of like these rise up noble scenes.
Mm-hmm.
What Fleming Rutledge, she called it like transfiguring scenes.
Okay. You know?
She thinks this is the first one, though when I had originally read it, I interpreted it like you as like that he's trying to intimidate them, and then, you know, it's like you're in suspense for like literally a sentence or whatever, mm-hmm. but then all of a sudden he's just like, but I'm Strider, I'm a really good guy, yeah. I'm literally going to protect you life or death.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So I think for, I don't know, she's going to say it's the first one, but we'll go on through the book. But
the transfiguring that she's referencing is Strider being the sort of haggard, muddy... windburned cowboy into sort of like a knightly tall soldier or whatever you call him, kingly.
Yeah, I think we kind of got to wait for another actual example, but yeah, there's that. But anyways, you know, like, yeah, he doesn't come off as the golden boy,
mm-hmm.
clearly in this chapter. And but despite that, you know, as we had mentioned before, he was kind of saying, he was like, well, you know, he divulges that he wants the hobbits to take him on, and he divulges that it's just like, well, I kind of want you to accept me just for my own sake, because, you know, a hunted man sometimes wearies of distress and longs for friendship,
right?
Which is like, you know, isn't that what you tell, like, when you meet somebody that you want to be friends with at random?
Yeah.
a hunted man sometimes wearies of distress and longs for friendship.
Right. That caught me off guard a little bit.
Yeah. But I mean, that was pretty vulnerable of him.
Right, you know? Yeah, because his character...
Notably vulnerable.
We know that he's alone out in the wilderness most of the time, and he presumably seems like pretty comfortable with that, pretty capable and sure of himself in all these situations. So for him to just be like, yeah, also, you know, it'd be great if you just wanted to talk to me, you know, I wouldn't complain.
But it's not like he's just like the weirdo at the bus stop, though. It is like, I feel like this is more so just like, this is the first, because obviously, you know, we heard the whole background. It's like, he knows Gandalf, he was looking for these guys specifically and everything. And so it's like, this, I think, is like the first explicit mention, like, I want your friendship. And friendship is going to be not in like a really lame, corny way, but friendship is going to be a major theme throughout all these books.
In a fellowship sort of way?
In a fellowship story. That word sounds more epic purely because The Fellowship of the Ring was written, and Lord of the Rings is an epic book.
Okay. So.
Also on his appearance, though. So, it's kind of common throughout history that beauty is kind of like a dangerous thing. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. It's known as that. You know, like, there's, like, the tempting woman throughout, like, all mythology and history, you mm-hmm. know, and then it's, like, she makes men do, like, crazy things, or in evil things for her affection, basically. Right. Or it's, like, you know, there's the wicked but beautiful queen throughout, like, mythology and everything, you know, like, think of, like, Snow White, or, like, C.S. Lewis's, like, The White Witch of mm-hmm. Narnia. Mm-hmm. Here it's the reverse, right? We got, seems foul, but is fair.
Right, right. Right?
Well, so long as we know, you know, we've only had a chapter with Strider, so it's like, all right, I guess we're going to trust he's fair, but hopefully he's fair. but yeah, here it's reversed, right?
Yeah, and just to, because I think it's kind of a funny double quote. So if you remember, Frodo says, I think one of his spies would, and this is talking about what he thinks servants of the enemy would feel like, would, well, seem fairer and feel fouler, if you understand. I see, laughed Strider. I look foul and feel fair. Is that it?
Yeah, you telling me I'm ugly?
Exactly. That's exactly what we're talking about, though.
The dominant one is seem fair, feel foul, but it's not quite unprecedented throughout, like, the history of literature and history in general that, you know, you actually seem foul and feel fair. The chief example that Tolkien thought of, and I personally thought of, would have been the life of Christ, mm-hmm. period. You know, you got the king who's born in a cave, and it's, you know, he only gets shepherds to come do him homage. This is when right. Jesus is born on Christmas night in, like, the stable or the cave, whichever it was. Meanwhile, there is still, like, a heavenly army of angels that are additionally watching over the newborn mm-hmm. baby. And then, of course, Jesus, he comes out of Nazareth, which is a hick town within literally an armpit of the Roman Empire, which is, like, Judea. Mm-hmm. You know, like, Israel was, like, the back, like, completely fringe, lame, horrible place for him to come out of. And then, you know, he dies on a crucifix, literally naked, in the most absolute poverty you can get, because he doesn't even have clothes at this point. They were bringing up in the books, too, that they might be referencing the suffering servant that's, like, kind of predicted in the mm-hmm. Old Testament, of which is fulfilled in Jesus. Here with Aragorn looking like, you know, again, like the foul appearance, but he's mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. probably fair. But
yeah, I think also, like, elsewhere in Christianity and other religious traditions, you could sort of, there's like a general, I guess you could call it the character of, like, the stranger or something, who is either God or a god disguised in rags, or you don't really know what the situation is, but it's somebody important who looks like a vagabond or bedraggled or whatever, and either is here to help or is in need of help. And it's kind of a test to the character in question, like, whether they can get over the appearance of someone and either, like, you know, not put them down because they look, like, dirty, or somehow, like, understand or interpret their character deeper than the cover of the book.
Yeah, Peter Kreeft was bringing up in his book The Philosophy of Tolkien, which is another essential one of my readings for this. He said the class between, like, good and beauty, you know, because it seems like it's mm-hmm. reversed, you know, like they're mm-hmm. at odds. He thinks, and Tolkien probably would have thought this too, that this is an effect of the fall. And, you know, it wasn't always this way, and it shouldn't be this way. You know, like, before the fall, it's like good things were beautiful. You know, like Adam and Eve, okay. It's like everything was. If it was beautiful, it was good. The creepy snake that was in the garden, that was bad, that was evil, and everybody knew it. You know, mm-hmm. They could tell just by looking at it. So I don't know. That's kind of the effect.
So it's sort of like the idea of dangerous beauty is like a corrupted beauty. And that corruption is like a post-fall idea.
Yeah, I mean, it's common throughout history, but it's like, it shouldn't right. be, you know? I mean, it's like, it's common in all of our stories, like, you know, as far right. back as you can go, but it shouldn't be that way. This is an effect that we're messed up. You know, speaking of the fall again, you know, our old unfallen character of Bombadil.
Which, if for those who forgot or weren't listening, I think two chapters, right? Two or three chapters back.
It was the same day of this.
The same day, oddly enough, when we were talking about Tom Bombadil as this peculiar character. You don't really know what he is. He's got qualities that are sort of both very earthy, but then almost godlike sometimes, like his ability to move through time and space, and it's very peculiar. We were commenting that he is like naive or innocent in the way that like a character before the fall would be, unburdened by like the suffering of the world.
Right, and so Fleming Rutledge again, relying heavily on her for this chapter. she was noting that right away we note that Strider is as stained and scarred by struggle as Tom Bombadil is unscathed. This is very
a great contrast.
Right, exactly. And it's like, you know, chapter after chapter, like right away. Do you see the finish of Bombadil chapter? We're right onto Strider. So it's like she's saying like this contrast was explicitly intentional, you know. This is a very nearly explicit suggestion, the first of many, that neutrality and detachment are not possible when so much is at stake. So, you know, Bombadil, it's like he's the unfallen guy, but he's kind of out of the story. And it's like, again, that didn't advance the plot any of those chapters. And so it's like he's just like something else that's out there, you know, like away. Whereas Strider, he's in it. He's facing it. You know, he's going on all these adventures, and it's like, you see that it's affected him. He's suffering. He's feeling
the weight of the world is very much on his shoulders, whereas Tom Bombadil can really only exist in his paradise because he's sort of blind to the world beyond his forest.
Yeah, Strider knows the enemy. Bombadil doesn't. Tom thought the enemy was outside his land, and it was just like a nuisance, you know, like, it's not going to affect me. I'm not worried about it. Whereas Strider, it's clearly the opposite. Strider's clearly the opposite of that, and he's worn and grim, and like, he's worn, and he's got a grim demeanor and everything. And, you know, Pippin's even making the jokes, like, oh, if we go through ditches all the way to Rivendell, we'll end up looking like you, Strider, you know, and Strider's just like, you couldn't even survive what I faced, buddy. And it's like, that might come off as corny, but it's like, that was actually, like, I think, like, a good line. It's like, no, like, you cannot do this. You know, and then again, this is, you were bringing this up when we were trying to roll through it, like, in the obscure Cliff's Notes. But like, it's like, there was some sort of explicit reference to guardians in the prologue, and the Shire, you know, the hobbits just thought it was like it was just the rule that, you know, to be sheltered in the Shire,
right?
But here, you know, we're finding out it's like, well, this is explicitly it was the rangers and, you know, in league with Gandalf that were guarding the Shire. Like, this is where it came from, you know. I mean, so it's like, this is Strider doing it because these people are out here fighting. The hobbits get to gossip about who owns Bag End.
And get to basically entertain, and we got the suggestion from the beginning, like, it's getting more intense. They get to entertain a worldview of, like, everything's right and good in the Shire, and people who choose to leave are weird, or there's something wrong with them, and it's a classic case of, like, kind of they don't know what they don't know. Like, they don't really know how lucky they are because of like what's making their life so livable, that type of thing.
And again, just to really nail home the point, it's like, yes, you have this because Strider and his ranger folk, they're out there giving this to you. I feel like this is also like probably a reference. Tolkien probably would have been aware of the reference that this is like what's going on beyond just like what we see in this three-dimensional scope of the world. There's other forces going on too. Like, Tolkien is well aware of that. Like, you know, higher forces than just human beings working around.
Okay.
Do you have anything else? I got one last quote to just end us on for the Strider section.
No, go for it.
So just to finish up with the quote, this is again Fleming Rutledge. We may say that at this point, Strider / Aragorn appears in the story as one who embodies above all the man who has committed himself to the life of active resistance against demonic forces. Again, the contrast with Tom Bombadil is notable. We might pause here to think of the people who give their lives to serve in dangerous places and for unpopular causes. People whose names are on enemy lists, who can never rest easy, whose mission puts them at risk from the worst of human capabilities, while the rest of us live in heedless pursuit of our own comfort. Let's just talk about more just, like, let's get the Hobbit perspective on this. Like, Frodo and Sam themselves. You know, because they were in pretty good debate about whether we should trust Strider or not.
Right. And from the beginning, Frodo is suspicious, but I think has sort of come around to acknowledging Strider seems pretty wise, knows what he's talking about, knows who Frodo is right from the outset, and is sort of a powerful character.
Well, here's my question on that. You know, I'm not going to say I disagree with you, but is Frodo just trusting him right off the bat because of what he's what Strider's actually telling him about himself, about Strider himself? Or is he trusting him because he kind of realizes, like, there is no way we are making it to Rivendell alone? You know, it's like, if we can get help, we need it, you know? Whereas Sam's clearly not as aware of his surroundings, you know, as Frodo, if you ask me. And so Sam's just like, suspicious? No, out. I don't want him. You know, let's do this ourselves. Like, we're going to trust to our own ways. You know, we can make it through this. Whereas Frodo's just like, no. We need the help. This guy, he feels foul, but he seems foul, but he feels fair. You know, I mean, I feel like we got to trust him, you know?
Right.
I don't know. Do you think, but I guess what I'm asking is, like, do you think Frodo's, like, just is feeling it out and trusts him, or he's just hoping against hope that he can trust this guy?
I think it's a little bit of both. The impression I got from Frodo is that one is, like, yeah, his intuition says that if this guy were bad, he would be really bad. Like bad things would have already happened, and he feels okay. But part of that is almost seems like weariness. Like Frodo's been like tossed between these different extremes of, like, you know, being chased by black riders or whatever, and fearing for his life and getting sucked into the Barrow Down stuff. That at this point, Frodo might be thinking, like, if this guy hasn't, like, already totally jeopardized my life, like, I'm pretty resigned to. like, you know, I'll keep going forward with this.
Yeah,
because he's come into contact with some very, like, supernatural bad forces. Like the fact that this guy's like a human having a conversation with him might already be points in his favor.
Like I said, I didn't disagree with you from the beginning, but, you know, like, this is probably like our first major choice where it's just like, throughout this book, I don't know, throughout this book and throughout life, you're going to have stuff where it's just like, okay, the choice between what's the good thing to do, the right thing to do, versus, like, what's the evil thing to do and, like, selfish thing to do, it's like, those are going to be obvious. And so the choice of there is obvious, which you should make, right? But this is, like, probably our first one where it's like, you really have to kind of, like, sift through and think, like, you know, like, use kind of almost like your wisdom. It's right. Like, what's going to be the smart thing to do to achieve our goal? It's like,
right.
Good and evil isn't clear cut here. Because it's like, that's what Lord of the Rings is great at. It's like, okay, good and evil is going to be clear cut. So obviously we're going to choose the good whenever we can. The good characters are going to choose the good whenever they can. Mm-hmm. But in this situation, though, it's like, okay, maybe it'd be a good thing to kind of just try by ourselves. Maybe it'd be a good thing to trust this guy. Mm-hmm. This is what we're literally trying to discern right now. Mm-hmm. You know, and like what you said, you had mentioned Frodo's intuition. He kind of trusts in that in this situation. Like, okay, I'm feeling this guy out. Like, literally, more so feeling than even, like, reasoning this guy out. He's feeling this guy out, and he's just saying, I think this is somebody that we can trust.
Yeah.
And so that's what he comes to in this situation. There's going to be other choices like this throughout the book. I think we'll return to this subject because it's, I don't know, you know, we'll see how successful Frodo is if he continues to trust to his intuition, you know, but
right.
I don't know. Here, hopefully, based on the end of the chapter, it seems like a success. We'll have to see as we go on, but it seems like this is a success.
Right. I was going to say,
What do you think personally, though? Just forget about having read the book, forget about having seen the movie, if you can, which is very difficult. Do you think you can trust Strider? Do you think this is like a friend for life that you just met?
Well, I come back to this thought that, like, they, every character that they've, like, really come in contact with has either been, like, good or really, really bad. So I think we can come back to this and make a different judgment later on in the story, but I don't know that we've had characters who are just, like, a bit bad or, like, not really trustworthy, something like that, that have played meaningful roles at this point, which maybe we can attribute this to, like, the characters that Tolkien has invented and thrown at us more so than we can say, like, that's how life goes or something. But I would be... I don't know. I have to say that if I was in this situation, I would be pretty untrustworthy of anyone. I'd probably be a little bit more like Sam. But then, if I consider...
But you also realize Frodo's situation.
Yeah, I mean, they're running headlong into a thing that they just... Like, they don't know what's going on. They don't know where their next meal is coming from.
Yeah.
They...
Four hobbits by themselves are...
Right. Right. So they're... Yeah, when you put it in that perspective, like, of that, like, complete... Like, we don't know where we're going or how we're getting there. Like, everything is... Everything's up in the air. I think then you're way more willing to trust someone who sounds like they know what they're talking about.
Yeah. Should we hit Butterburn really quick?
Yeah, yeah. What do you make of our jolly innkeeper?
I think we mentioned everything above, but it's just like, okay, this guy seems like he's run-of-the-mill mm-hmm. average dude you got, but it's like even he was coming up with just pretty noble yeah. responses, and it's like, can we see ourselves as Frodo doing this monumental task carrying the ring to Mordor, or even as Merry and Pippin and Sam as his friends that mm-hmm. are going to accompany him on the task? It's like, maybe not all of us are up for that, but it's like Butterburn, I do see that could be anybody. It's just like, can you just give at least that noble response that it's like you're going to help them while they're in your town, you know, mm-hmm. and send them on their way? Well, I liked him in this chapter, even though he's kind of like a bumbling buffoon. He redeemed himself as opposed to the last chapter, where it's like everything he said was
right.
slightly annoying because he wasn't he was like hinting at a plot, but now it's all out in the open. It's like, okay, he's proved himself an honest guy. I like it. Okay, should we talk about the Black Riders?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we gotta give this scene some treatment, even though we mention it in the long cliffs notes.
Yeah. So meanwhile, while the hobbits are getting to know Strider, Merry is out what sounds like being attacked by Black Riders. Is that right?
Okay. Yeah, okay. So here's so from everything I've read in the description, I also know what comes in future chapters, but he didn't explicitly say it, but he definitely said that the horses are gone. But I'm almost going to imagine that maybe it's really, really dark, so it doesn't matter. But I think they don't even have their cloaks on.
Interesting. So what does this mean? Like, you're seeing the...
Well, all right. I think we'll get into it in future chapters. But it's like, okay, maybe it was dark and it was just really hard to see him. But I think whatever's under their cloak, that's also very dark. Mm-hmm. And so it's like when they're out here, it's like you can't even tell that they're sneaking up on you, which Merry like kind of couldn't based on like
right. It's just like a shadow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now the thematic thoughts of it being a shadow we'll address, I think, in the next chapter.
Okay.
But yeah, I think for practical purposes, I think this was kind of like a shadow that was almost coming up on him, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, mm-hmm. and then there was the Black Breath incident itself, which was kind of weird. That quote from Merry, I went out for a stroll. I had come back and was standing just outside the light of a lamp, looking at the stars. Then suddenly I shivered and felt that something horrible was creeping near. There was a sort of deep shade among the shadows across the road. See, I really don't think they're wearing cloaks. Just mm-hmm. beyond the edge of the lamplight, it slid away at once into the dark without a sound. There was no horse.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
And it's like that thing that it goes on to say, Nob said he found him, and then Merry said, I thought I had fallen into deep water. You know, like that was the description of it. And Strider's saying, that's the Black Breath. You know, the riders... They must have left their horses outside, and they passed back through the southern gate, and they, yeah.
We got no other explanation, though, of what the Black Breath is. It was just something that Strider threw out there as though everyone knows, oh yeah, the Black Breath.
Well, I mean, but that description, what is it? Fell into deep water? That description...
is what it feels like.
Yeah,
but I guess the implication is that is it literally like the breath of these strange creatures like knocks you out or something like that?
Yeah, well, apparently.
Being in their presence is such a powerful force that you pass out or something?
Yeah, or like you jump into they didn't say cold, but like if you jump into like freezing deep water, I mean, it's like, you know, that's mm-hmm. like paralyzing almost, right? You know?
Yeah.
Like I can't even do it, so I'm asking to make sure. You know, like I literally can't stand it. But yeah, and Mary goes on to say too, it's like, well, they're going to attack the inn, and then Strider's got those interesting lines. He's like, I'll just read it again. No, I think not. They're not all here yet. And in any case, that is not their way. In the dark and loneliness, they are strongest. They will not openly attack a house where there are lights and many people. Not until they are desperate. Not while all the long leagues of Eriador still lie before us. But their power is in terror, and already some in Bree are in their clutch. They will drive these wretches to some evil work, Fairney and some of the strangers. And then there was the other line there, too, that Strider also had. He was saying earlier, you will have to leave the open road after night, for the horsemen will watch it day and night. You may escape from Bree and be allowed to go forward while the sun is up, but you won't go far. They will come to you in the wild, in some dark place where there is no help, and then that's where they're going to attack you and take the ring. So it's like, so we're mm-hmm. seeing how these like Black Riders kind of operate. So it's like Merry was by himself in the city, you know, wandering around, and then all of a sudden, you know, that's when he's ambushed, not when he's like with his friends and everything. It's you know, alone right. and isolated. Right. And so that's kind of how these things are operating.
Kind of, I'd say, well, one thing is like quintessential horror movie behavior.
True.
You know, if you're in the group, the lights are on, there's not a problem. But it's only when you're in a spooky place do spooky things happen.
Yeah. But these guys thrive off spooky places. Thrive. Right.
And it's also interesting because this is maybe the first... This is not a description of weakness at all, but this actually makes them sound maybe like... What do you call it when someone is like taking advantage of a situation?
Like a leech or something? Or...
Yeah. There's a word for it that I can't think of. No, opportunists?
Yeah, okay. Opportunists, yeah, that works.
Like they're more opportunists than monsters, where... Like up to this point,
like kicking somebody when they're down. You know, they're not going to confront them.
Yeah, you get the impression. At least I've had the impression up to now that like you come across one of these Black Riders, like or rather Frodo or one of the hobbits comes across these Black Riders at any point, they're done. They're like we don't know if they're being taken hostage or being killed, but they're done. And here we get the suggestion that like these guys are spooky and there's bad things at work, but they're not going to attack you in broad daylight. Or, you know, with a lot of other people around. Like, they could be scared off in the right context. Which is actually, like, to me, sounded like a weaker description than I expected.
Well, I think that's a good point to say, like, yeah, that's kind of weaker of them. Like, it's intimidating when you're in the moment. But, like, so long as you avoid that moment, it's not
right,
intimidating.
Right.
It's literally not, you know, not as much.
Yeah. Or the implication that they won't attack. They're not going to attack the inn.
To allude what we know, for people that have already listened to this, to allude to what we know about the Black Riders in the future, it's like, I'm still kind of skeptical this actually matches up with their character,
right.
But Strider/Aragorn here, he says he's basically saying, like, they're biding their time. You know, it's like, they're biding their time for, like, the one big attack.
Right.
It's like, you know, let's do this quick
mm-hmm,
and quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Almost. But everything you're saying is
valid. Another implication we got from Strider is that he said, like, I know their number. Like, there's more of them in the east where they're going, and maybe more of the Black Riders are together. They're more emboldened or something like that. Like, sort of a like group mentality or something. Like, they're sort of opportunists. One of them in daylight against a group of people, they're going to be pretty shy and not prone to do something really bad. But as you get further east, there's more of them. They're more. It's like you're on their turf. The situation is shifting. So that's another thing I could see.
Agreed. Yeah. Also interesting with this Merry encounter itself. He said this was another use of the passive voice. So like just like Frodo like putting on the ring like. It somehow, you know, or something like what does Mary say here? He says, Neither brave nor silly, I think. I could hardly help myself. I seemed to be more drawn somehow. Like, you know, because after he was, after he had heard, seen, like, the Black Rider or the Shape or the Shadow or whatever, he was kind of drawn to, like, follow it a little bit, which Strider had said was like, oh, that's kind of noble of you to follow it, but that was very foolish. And, you know, he's like, well, I didn't have a choice, you know, brave nor silly. You know, I just did what I could. I couldn't help myself, you know. I was drawn somehow.
Right.
So anytime they say somehow, because literally if you go back to the last chapter where like he's analyzing like how he could have put on the ring, they say somehow there too.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime they say somehow, that's always going to be some sort of guide for some sort of like unseen hand, you know,
okay.
like guiding hand, you know, whether that's the influence of the ring, whether that's some higher thing that Gandalf had been talking about in the second chapter, that big chapter that we did, you know, I mean, who knows?
But
there's passive voice is very crucial every single time it's mentioned throughout all of these books.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you got anything else on the riders?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I think that's about it.
So we leave the hobbits sort of buckling down for a dangerous and scary night. They're pretty much boarding up the windows, gathering all their bags, and preparing to depart early in the morning. And so join us next time to find out what becomes of them as they continue their journey eastwards.
Okay, just me tonight, just a review, and then we'll just be done. Okay, so this one comes from KC Tonner. Great podcast, 5 stars. I'm a big fan of The Hobbit, all Tolkien books, the symbolism and the eyesights are amazing. Love this podcast. All right, that one was pretty simple. We'll just get out of here on that, and just call it a night. Everybody have a good week. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, y'all.